Welcome to the 10K Collective podcast for 6, 7 and 8 figure Amazon and e-commerce sellers, a part of the amazing FBA family. If you want to scale fast, target a 7 figure exit and enjoy the process, then keep listening. Today's episode is sponsored by the new e-commerce podcast, The E-commerce Leader, co-hosted by myself, Michael Veazey, and Jason Miles, top 1% Shopify store owner and Udemy's highest rated e-commerce instructor. If you're the owner of a thriving e-commerce business, look for The E-commerce Leader on your favorite podcast app and subscribe today. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Lord Mayor, if you're listening, this is Michael Veazey from the 10K Collective and Amazing FBA. 10K Collective is a podcast geared to the needs of 6, 7 and 8 figure Amazon sellers, and Amazon sellers is becoming the same as broader e-commerce sellers as people's sophistication develops and their wish to protect their business as well. So Shopify's in the mix. Today, we've got a much bigger picture way of looking at business for people who are in the startup sort of world. And that includes a lot of e-commerce sellers. We've got Arjun Rai, who's the founder and CEO of Hello Woofy, which is a smart marketing dashboard for underdog marketers, also known as small, medium businesses. Underdogs, I like that, already positioning us as the plucky underdog dog that's going to win in all American movies. So welcome back to the show.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me back, Michael. And Nicole, we're underdogs, right? We're hustlers, we're underdogs. I even like we'll go as far as say we're tastemakers of what is yet to come. And if you want to take a look at where the business world is going, where majority of the GDP is coming from, it's small businesses doing really well with what they do, which is catering to their local communities. And now local communities going global with digital marketing. And we can talk a little bit about that because that's what Hello Woofy is all about.
Excellent. Well, you're really flattering us all with tastemakers. But actually, it's true because I, for example, I've been working from home mostly via Zoom and what have you, if it's consulting type stuff and other many other forms of digital work for several years. So when everyone's sort of going on about working from home and Zoom like it's news, I'm like, well, I've been doing that for years. So you're right. We are in a lot of ways ahead of the curve and need to stay ahead of the curve as well. Mm-hmm. So tell us more about your background. Because obviously in the last episode, we focused on, rightly, I think what Hello Woofy does for people and some broader pictures are already emerging about your practices as a CEO, what your startup's doing. Tell us a bit more about your background. How did you come to be doing all this stuff?
So been a serial entrepreneur for a very long time, as long as I can remember, selling something or the other. Always very obsessed about selling things for a quarter. I remember being 7 or 9, selling flowers, turning them into a garland and selling those at my grandmother's gate in India. Now, obviously the issue was I was in India in a different currency and I was selling them for 25 cents, a quarter, which made no sense back then. But I was, obsessed about that. And then a couple of other stories of that in childhood. And then eventually I ended up, working on a startup in my late teens, coming to New York, working on an agency out of the university incubator, which I helped build the Entrepreneurship Center there as well. And then launching another startup as a result of that, which was creative project management for marketing firms. Raised about $1 million for that. We ended up figuring out we were too early. We were betting that touchscreens would become bigger and cheaper, that touch projectors would become a norm, and both of which did happen. They just happened years after we ended up running out of capital. So learned my first sense of venture back failure there, and how to raise capital, how not to raise capital, how to build a company, MVP, all of those little details that helped profoundly with the next business. And the next business was Hello Woofy. We launched about 9 months ago, 8 or 9 months ago. We've scaled from just about 30 customers to nearly 6,000. We've grown 18,000% this year. And we're incredibly fortunate to be able to help small businesses all over the world, again, for the price of a cup of coffee with marketing, digital marketing tools that not only touch social media, but now blogging, soon Amazon Alexa scheduler with all their customers quarantined at home. You can use our platform to directly schedule content to appear in your customers' and your listeners' fans' living rooms, so long as they opt in. So we're taking a very different approach, and obviously we're a B2B company, but a lot of the things that we're going to talk about and how other businesses should be doing things in terms of talking to their customers is very B2C. And that would be my only takeaway from the show is how do you make sure that you're not just doing one service, but you're making sure your customer is always thinking of you as top of mind.
Okay, so that last point you just made then, I mean, first of all, congratulations. That's a kind of amazing CV or resume, as you would say. And interesting that you can be too far in advance, right? Betting on touchscreens, if I understand, but it was just before touchscreens were really kind of taken off. Is that roughly what it was?
Yeah.
MVP obviously being the minimum viable product from Eric Ries's famous book, The Lean Startup, which I feel is quite intellectually challenging. Maybe it's because I'm dumb. But yeah, there's some useful concepts that come out of it, sometimes not as understood as they could be. But in other words, not building something then it's more complex than it needs to be. But on the other hand, I think sometimes for people who are new to e-commerce space or indeed any space, that can mean putting crap in the market. And I don't think that's what minimum viable product means. It's just a minimal product. So even that, there's a whole bunch to discuss. But tell me about what you were just saying. So a B2B company that acts like B2C, and you were also saying about being what, that like a, I suppose you're implying be the one-stop shop for a certain type of customer. Is that more or less the concept that you've got there?
So, of course, we're a social media scheduler. We start off the company as that, but now we're doing helping small businesses, the smallest of small businesses, hence the underdog. We're helping them with auto-completing entire blog posts. Soon, you're going to be able to schedule content directly into your customers' living rooms as well, right? So these are all things that typically a larger company would be the one that would be using, because these are very enterprise-grade technologies that are cutting edge, are the latest and greatest. And in fact, they blow away all of our competitors just on a feature basis itself, but also on a price basis. This is $49 a year, and we're obviously offering a lifetime deal right now, so every year $49. So that's just the technology. That's just the platform. Now, when I say B2C, that means that when you go into HelloWolfie.com and you sign up and sign in, what you'll see immediately is a couple of things, right? This is where the consumer side comes in. It's not just you pay me for a service and you get a service. That's not it. You're going to start seeing something called a store. All of our customers can hire one another for whatever need they need. So if you're an agency and you use our platform, you need a graphic designer, we've definitely got graphic designers on our platform, and you can hire them, or an editor. Or if you're a podcaster and you need a quick video editor to work on your podcast, we got people, on our, out of the 6,000 people who use our platform as well. So that's another way of thinking outside the box, is not just the technology, but how can you render another solution that a small business needs? And that's thinking ahead. The other capability is the university. Any of our small businesses, almost like a master class, which is a set of courses by Oprah Winfrey's channel called The Own, you can learn about running a business from Bob Iger there. Well, in our case, if you're running a small business and it happens to be a coffee shop and you want to run a coffee shop yourself, we have customers, definitely you have coffee shops, right? They can teach you how to run that, and they can link back to their coffee shop. They can link back to their LinkedIn, their Facebook page or whatnot. Another capability is every Friday we have, I like to say jokingly, therapy sessions for small businesses, but it's really client networking calls. Literally at 12 p.m. EST every Friday, anyone can jump on and ask me any question, whether it's related or not related to HelloWolfie, whether it's related or not related to social media marketing. It could be about how to build a business. How do you raise capital? How do you do any of that things, right? And then also we have a Facebook group. Any of our customers can talk to us directly, tell us what's working for them, what isn't working for them, what features they want us to build. And also the same customers have invested into our company. They own a piece of the company now through something here in the United States called Regulation CF, or equity crowdfunding. And so again, it's a very different kind of company. We obviously have the B2B SaaS metrics, but we're acting like a B2C company, which is very empathetic to the customer needs.
Okay, so if I'm going to take the learnings you've got, obviously it's very impressive stuff, and maybe some people listening will eventually create a SaaS company, because there's a lot of those in the Amazon space. I mean, I know a couple of my friends have done that, some successfully and some found it really expensive and difficult. But for the majority of people listening, I'm going to assume that they are, the 10K Collective type listeners. So they are 6, 7, 8 figure Amazon sellers. Maybe they got quite a bit Shopify presence, maybe not. So what I'm understanding from you, and I want to check if this is real thinking, is that you're suggesting a business model that is quite different from the traditional e-commerce business, which is that you could, if you choose to, have a website that is not just about selling physical products, but is a one-stop shop for connecting communities, like hiring each other for advice, and as well as content. Is that something we could take from this business if we wanted to?
Yeah, it's not just, you can get very tunnel vision as a small business owner, right? And especially if you're an e-commerce business owner, you're like, I'm selling one product or maybe two products or three products in a specific niche, and that's it. Well, if you're selling tires, what if you can help your customer that may be a mother or a father, maybe has a teenager at home that's getting ready to learn driving, who are they going to turn to in terms of teaching their kids how to, you know, fix their car, learn about their car, the ins and outs of their car, even, you know, giving driver's tests, like, you know, things like that. It would make sense for you to be that local shop that does that. Now, obviously, with digital marketing, you could be local and global at the same time. So then run online courses, YouTube courses, or whatever that may be, teaching teenagers how to think about their cars, how to fix their tires and things like that, because they're getting ready to become, you know, adults and they have to do those things. Or if you're a coffee shop owner, working from coffee shops was a big thing before COVID, right? Where are those customers going today? What resources do they need? What content can you distribute to them besides just giving coffee outside? Here in New York, we have outdoor seating right now and outdoor dining. That's one pivot you made, which is for the business model. But what other resources could you do? Could you get free Wi-Fi outside? Like, just thinking outside the box makes you very consumer-minded, which is customer-minded as well. It's not just about the B2B, which is the business needs to the business needs and then making money in between. If you can add a C to that component, you're actually being very empathetic. And that's what I would encourage any business can do this. Even a bodyguard business can do this, right? What are the other things that the customer, the high net worth individual needs besides protection? I mean, it's literally any business. You can come up with some other ways of maximizing revenue.
And I really think you're right. And one of the very simple opportunities in very concrete terms that is absolutely present for any e-commerce seller of physical products is information products. And it's not that hard to do, as we said before in the last episode, that develop it for me personally. Maybe I'm just more verbal and more geared to information. But if one isn't, I don't physically make widgets in my backyard. I hire somebody, I get a contract manufacturer or private label manufacturer, whatever it may be, often abroad, sometimes in my home country, it doesn't matter. I get somebody else to do it. And I could do the same with content creation. So the idea of selling information as an obvious thing, like it could be as simple as I know somebody who sells cleaning products and they are selling somebody a book on how to clean and it's doing really, really well for them. And it's a fantastic sort of top of funnel type product. It's often, there's zero marginal cost as well. If you're creating an ebook, for example, there is no cost. Mm-hmm. Every time you sell one, it doesn't cost you more money. Whereas if you're selling cleaning products or coffee, it costs you every time you got the cost of goods sold. So that is an absolute no-brainer for a lot of people in e-commerce. Yep. I see very few people doing it. I think that what opportunity is, it's simple. It's not a complex business model. If somebody's buying shoe polish from you, then sell them a book about shoe polishing. I mean, I don't know if it's that primitive.
And here's the thing. There's a really, really good book I recommend. I think the promotion might still be up and running. It's by a guy named, you know, Russell Brunson, founder of ClickFunnels. He has two books I highly recommend. One is Traffic Secrets, which I think you can buy. You can get the audiobook, you know, for an extra fee, or you can just get the printed version and just pay shipping. And the other one is called Expert Secrets. Both of them will explain in more detail what I'm talking about, which is creating a culture around your product. ClickFunnels is a SaaS company, right? Don't get me wrong. It's a SaaS company. It has a software. People pay for it month-to-month basis. But they have such a huge following around presentations, around conferences, around the 2-comma club, 3-comma club. Those are the things that will allow people to come back over and over again and recommend other people. And we know for a fact in our Facebook group, Content Masters by Hella Wolfie, other members of our Facebook group refer other members into the Facebook group who'd end up turning into customers. Now, in a traditional company, for any of our competitors, they don't have Facebook groups, first of all. That kind of word of mouth marketing wouldn't happen unless there was a platform that allowed for it, right? It would usually happen over text, it would happen over email, but then we don't have any control over it. And I can jump in with video and say, hey, thanks so much for being an awesome customer. How else can I help you?
That's true. I mean, I guess what you're saying in summary of that is the sort of virality, if you like, the it's an unfortunate term, but still relevant in COVID times, the sort of speed, the R number of a disease is a bad thing, but the R number of the speed at which somebody invites somebody else into a group is a very good thing to engineer, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as you're saying, creating a culture around your product. I mean, the 2-comma club is, I guess what's smart about that is that they've linked what is my experience as significant psychological profile of a typical entrepreneur, need for significance. Mm-hmm. You need to go somewhere and brag about the size of appendages. So we say, you know, how big is your revenue? And my club has legitimized that. And that's super smart because, of course, they're making people feel very, very good about themselves mm-hmm. whilst using the product. I mean, and I'm quite sure you could do that with shoes. You could do that with baby clothes. You could do it with anything. I'm absolutely sure the best coffee of the I mean, I'd do it with coffee. I like coffee. I brew coffee. I'm superficial enough to have a best coffee maker of the week award and feel good about it. So I'm sure yep. that could be leveraged. It's smart psychology.
Same here. I don't roast my beans, but I grind my beans every single day, and I have a barista machine at home that does everything. It makes the cappuccinos. And so it's like little things like that. Just go where the emotions are. And eventually it'll drive revenue, I promise you. But you can go in with a revenue mindset. You need to go in with an empathetic human-to-human mindset. And just take a look at our company. We grew 18,000% because of everything I said.
And you're typical on CEO as opposed to the CFO, because I think it's important for... There are two problems that I see in e-commerce. One is that people are too financially... Illiterate is probably too harsh a thing to say, because I'm not, that kind of implies I'm financially really literate and I'm not an accountant and I don't have a business school background, but too ignorant of the basics and numbers. So what happens for those guys is they spend a lot of money on Amazon ads and they look at the top line revenue and that's it. And then they're really disappointed at some point. And then the other one is being over analytical. And I've literally had accountants as clients for startups, and they're really hard work as well. So I think that what you're following the right principles based on psychology and trusting, keeping an eye on the numbers, but recognizing those are kind of a trailing metric, seems to be what I'm getting from you. And I think that's the classic CEO mindset, right? It's like,
absolutely,
it's customers that buy stuff that give you the money. And you, I think there's another phrase I've heard a lot from digital marketers, follow the numbers. And I think that's BS. I think you need to be guided by the numbers. If people aren't buying your coffee, your course or your book or your physical widgets, if the conversion percentage is horrible, that tells you something for sure. But that isn't the whole story. I mean, if you just follow numbers, I think you're just going to end up doing what everyone else does. And on Amazon, that's such a classic problem, because everyone's using the same analytical tools and they end up buying the same exact products for the same price points. And then what is death of differentiation, no profit. So I really like that. Now, another question, another area I want to talk about. You've already mentioned COVID a couple of times. It's sort of late September here. You're in New York, I'm in London. We've experienced various levels of lockdown. I think there's a very large probability that we're going to experience that during the winter season again. So how has COVID changed or interacted with the sort of things that startups need to do / the kind of digitization of the culture?
It's so interesting. There was one day not too long ago, maybe about 2 weeks ago, where I pitched in two different cities within two hours, right one after the other. And that was only because I was able to, the two competitions were now digital and all available online, which wouldn't have been normal back then, right? If you wanted to, we were pitching in Texas, we were pitching in Berlin, we also did a pitch in, I think, California somewhere. It was very unusual because I'm sitting in New York in my apartment. I was able to compete on a global scale while working with small businesses and helping them on the local level. So if you're a startup today and you're still grasping that mindset, get over it, because you need to figure out how can you be local and digitally global at the same exact time. And that's where the money is, right? If with our Facebook group, Content Masters, it's not just a couple hundred people in there, thousands of people in there out of the thousands of customers that are using our platform. But we're constantly sharing content, engaging on a global basis. You have to, as a small business owner, even if you're a restaurant, distribute content and know that that content can go to the far reaches of the planet and have an impact in some case. And if you're set up for, capturing that impact into revenue, whether it's an ebook, whether it's an online consultation, whether it's a Fiverr profile where you can do consultation there, be prepared, because that's how the new way of business is going to be going forward. I mean, take a look at fitness classes, right? Fitness classes were for a very long time available online, but Peloton and all of these amazing startups, Lululemon just acquired another company for, I think, $500 million that was very similar in terms of at-home fitness. These are the new ways of distributing content. You need to understand that, and you have to be at the forefront of it within your industry. Every industry can have a COVID version, a post-COVID version, and you can make revenue.
Now, what's interesting about that is that obviously in a lot of ways, e-commerce selling and Amazon selling is already a digital, 100% digital marketing and sales channel. However, when it comes to physical products, what always strikes me is the fulfillment side, which people don't focus on enough on. There's the consumer demand side. There's what percentage of consumer demand for physical widgets, fast-moving consumer goods, is online. And obviously, the percentage is shot up. And okay, but then the fulfillment side is becoming a really big problem, not just because of COVID, but even if you take COVID out of the equation, if everyone's at home and buying stuff, there's a prediction that we might have 150%, 200% year-on-year growth for Amazon revenue. That's a huge fulfillment problem. There's no way any fulfillment network could cope with that. Now, what's your take on the sort of ways of proving ourselves against that, with the, again, thinking outside of the box?
Take all the feedback from your customers that have bought one widget, right? And then ask them, how can you make it better? I mean, constantly, every single day, people are telling us in our Facebook group, what can you improve? If we have any ideas, we'll put it there and see what the customers say. And we'll ask them, hey, do you like this design? Do you like this design? Do you like this feature? This feature that we just deployed, it, what do you think about it? Similarly, on Amazon, if you're building a specific kind of gadget, I mean, think back to the days of Kickstarter when they started, right? Or Indiegogo, that was your way of being very empathetic, very consumer-minded, where you're getting feedback from the customer. The customer is able to invest in the product. Today, you can invest in the company behind the product through Regulation CF. In case in point, people can invest as low as $100 into our company, and they get not only the Hello Wolfie platform, but every other product we end up developing in the future. That's the kind of mindset that I recommend all retailers online, all e-commerce stores online to be able to do. And again, small businesses get it really nicely, right? It's the medium businesses, the bigger companies that aren't iterating as fast enough. They're not taking the customer into their boardrooms and asking, what do you think we should be doing as a strategy? I was listening to Howard Schultz, the masterclass, again, by Oprah Winfrey, the Oprah Winfrey Network. And one of the things he said is he had kept two seats empty at his board meetings. One was for a employee of the company, not just the board of directors or people senior management. One was for an employee and one was for the customer. And they would have an opportunity to be in the meeting itself and say, this is what I think about what the board is saying or what Howard Schultz is saying. And that's the kind of mindset you need to have, is constantly keep your end customer, member, whatever you call them, into the decision-making, whether it's you're coming up with new products, new services, maybe you're expanding the company. You could hire your own customers. I mean, we've seen that happen over and over again. They're the most passionate.
I like that thinking. By the way, I know that somebody who's moderating their Facebook group for them, or one of the moderators, is in fact one of their customers. And that's very smart, because there's exactly. Nothing like somebody's actually paid money for your service, but is a consumer, is an advocate of you. Yep. A couple of things of what you just said. First of all, having the empty space in the boardroom. I believe that Jeff Bezos at one point, and maybe he still does this, was infamous for having a space for the customer, but didn't actually ask one in. So it was a notional customer, which I think is, a lot of people may find it a little bit odd, but actually physically asking them in, I think, is super smart. The second thing you said, though, I think you're flattering the small business owners that they are usually better than the medium-sized businesses about asking customers what they want. But I can tell you that really pretty small businesses, as in like they're doing about $1 million a year in revenue, which on Amazon is not that much considering it's top line revenue, which you might argue doesn't really belong to their business ever because Amazon takes it straight away. But anyway, so they're not huge businesses, and they very quickly end up referring to the following sources in my experience. Number one, their competition. They're incredibly aware of what their competition is doing, of course. Not wrong, but they're aware of what their peers are saying in the mastermind, which I think is much better. But very few of them, and some of the smartest ones do, but very few talk to their customers. It blows my mind. I mean, they look at their reviews, but they don't actually actively, proactively go and seek their customers out. Now, I think that's partly because the Amazon thing makes it harder, because Amazon owns the customers kind of thing and the relationship.
Yep.
But nevertheless, it is still possible. If you've got a Facebook group and you're doing that to get reviews and to drive awareness and brand sort of buzz, that's great. But it strikes me as something that is low-hanging fruit for most people, because
even
most people don't do that.
Even the review section, like, get the English right, get all your questions answered, like, make sure you have a call to action within the, here's another trick, right? When we do software updates on the Apple Store or any updates in Google Chrome with the Google Chrome extension that works anywhere on the internet, we make it a point to have a call to action in the update itself, because they ask you, what is the update about? And then people can see, oh, it's bug fixes and things like that. But we actually say they're bug fixes, but if you have any other questions, please email us or visit our website. It's every little opportunity you get to be in front of the customer, make a call to action. And the reviews, in my mind, are the most important. Answer the question in depth and then say, if you like more insistence, feel free to reach out.
Absolutely. And I think you can do that in Amazon questions on an Amazon listing or indeed on your own website pretty straightforwardly. Okay, so this is good stuff. What do you think are the top three lessons you would give to a startup owner, bearing in mind that you're within the first year of a startup? So it's that exciting, high risk, high excitement phase. What lessons would you give to somebody who's that in that kind of phase with an e-commerce startup?
I would say start now. Like, get all of your social media properties up and running, get all of your funnels up and running. You have a website that can capture from different angles traffic. Make sure you have landing pages for each of the sources that you have. Make sure you have Facebook pixels installed. Make sure you have Google Analytics installed, because that stuff is only as good as the first day it starts working. Because in our case, we didn't do it for a couple of months, and our data only goes back a couple of months now. But the learning and the wealth of data you could have been able to get earlier, it could have a huge impact. So those are the tactical things. Just get started right now. Put it on credit. Take a line of credit out or whatever you need to do. Don't focus about the cost, because if you do it right, will pay off eventually. So I would just say get started today. So get started yesterday. Now the second thing is, make sure you're thinking about beyond your product. Again, if you're that tire company, think about teaching your customers, teenagers, how to take care of their car, if you have to do it over Zoom, if you have to do it over FaceTime, do that as well, right? Sell other ancillary courses and services and maybe other products as well that'll do really well. I mean, think about the ClickFunnels idea, right? If you can buy one bottle of vitamins, can you buy three bottles of vitamins, or can you sell another product, which will be like, this will take care of another part of your body, right? It'll enhance another part of your body, and there's just buy that for an extra $20 or whatever it is. Think of it almost like a funnel and maximizing revenue per customer. We're about to do some things very soon that allow us to do that as well. We've sold ebooks in the past, we've sold e-courses in the past and things like that. It's not just about the subscription itself. And the third thing is, I would say, be very, very mindful of the customer and have a constant dialogue with them. If you're not showing them what you're about to come up with, if you're not showing them how you're improving it, if you're not talking to them online and in a scalable manner that other customers can see, whether it's in our case Capterra, people can see our reviews publicly. If it's our Facebook group Content Masters, people can see how we're interacting publicly. Those are the little things that you're doing, not only for the one-on-one customer, but keep in mind, the entire world is looking at you and how you take care of existing customers before they become customers as well. And it's those little things that are non-scalable in the beginning that'll really drive revenue at the end, because people want to know that you're going to take care of them.
So that reminds me of the quote, I can't remember who said it, the guy who ran Y Combinator, I think one of the most infamously successful, incubators for companies in the world. And he said something like, do stuff that doesn't scale. Is that right? I can't remember who said that.
Yep. And there's a great book about this as well. It's called Traction. And it's by the founder of DuckDuckGo. Take a look at it. It has multiple traction channels you should be focusing on. And we've obviously figured out our traction channels, but they could be entirely different ones for you.
So can you just quickly define what you mean by traction? Because it's a commonly used word, but seems to mean a few different things.
So traction is basically when you see usage and you see people engaging in whatever you're measuring, right? And so in our case, Facebook group, we're seeing traction in it. We're seeing customers join it over and over again, or I guess not over and over again, but multiple customers joining the group on a daily basis. So that shows that it's working. And then you're seeing people engaging and commenting, and that's traction in and of itself. Another note is also traction where we grew 18,000% this year. We're about to drive nearly $250,000 or more in revenue. That's also traction. But in the book, traction channels are things like email marketing. Are you seeing engagement and open rates, right? Social media marketing. Are you seeing people coming to your website through the ads you're pushing out? It could be events. When we had events, live events, are you seeing people signing up? And are you seeing people converting into customers? Whatever you do can have a metric, and that is a traction channel that allows you to get the metrics.
Excellent. Whatever you do can have a metric. That makes a lot of sense. And if those metrics are going the right way, then I guess that's a sign of traction. Okay, that's interesting.
Yep. And this applies to dating as well. Like any part of your website, anything you do in life can have a traction channel. You just have to work it.
I really like it. This is like, I got this image of New York dating in 2020. There's somebody sitting there with a spreadsheet. I've heard of this from somebody else. So they're sitting there with a spreadsheet on one screen and Zoom on the other. Percentage of smiles per minute or something. I'm loving that. The analytical way of thinking, that's hilarious. But anyway, I mean, joking apart, I think those three lessons: start now, think beyond your main or first product, which I just think is just huge for e-commerce. As you say, everyone can get their tunnel vision, and it's so hard, isn't it? This is one question I've got to ask you then before we wrap up. What's the difference between focus and thinking too hard inside the box? I mean, this is a hell of a sort of difficult question.
No, it's very straightforward. If you're not seeing results, heck, forget the results. If you're not actually doing the action required to get results, then you know you're on the wrong path. But if you're making the action, making the efforts, and then you're seeing results, great for you. If you're doing the action, you're taking the efforts, and you're not seeing results, change and pivot and iterate. And then if you then see results, you have the right traction channel, you have the right efforts that you're doing, and then spend 90% of your resources on that. Keep in mind, 10% of your resources should, and that includes time, should always go into things that are experimental. So constantly be looking for new ways to supplement your existing channels that are working all the time, because you don't want to get too close to a traction channel that may dry up tomorrow. That 10% may save you in the long term.
And those words could be geared to the needs of Amazon sellers more than ever, because if you got an Amazon channel that's killing it right now, okay, go build a Shopify site, even if it starts horrible, because if they shut it down, that's 100% of your income gone for maybe 3 months. It's not pretty. So absolutely right. You could not be more right about that. Listen, this has been a great pleasure. I must let you get back to, you know, whatever New Yorkers do when they're dating on Zoom in 2020 or whatever, you know, have millions of dollars you have to raise as a founder. It sounds like you have a big life there. Been a huge pleasure. Thank you so much for bringing, you know, some of that New York sort of startup energy to the table. That's just really refreshing. I love it.
Absolutely, Michael. And if there's anything I can do for you, or if there's anything I can do for any of your listeners as well, just reach out to me, arjun@hellowiffy.com. You can learn about us on hellowiffy.com. My website's there. My Calendly is there as well. Schedule a demo with us. If there's any questions you need answered, if you need help with your small business, just reach out. You don't have to buy the software from us, but obviously if you do, thank you. And then you become a part of our family and you have a direct access to our roadmap. You get to build a product with us. You get to invest in the company as well and own a piece of it if you do the Republic campaign that we're running. There's so many ways that we're looking to work with you. So reach out.
Thanks, man. Real pleasure.
All right. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the 10K Collective podcast, part of the family of amazing FBA podcasts. Today's episode is sponsored by the new e-commerce podcast, The E-Commerce Leader. The podcast is hosted by yours truly and Jason Miles, multi-million dollar Shopify owner and Udemy's highest rated e-commerce instructor. If you're the owner of a thriving online business and you want to become the best e-commerce leader you can be, it's got your name on it. For free guides and mini courses on many topics, go to www.theecommerceleader.com.